I look better than usual. Everybody's awake. This is going to be the last message in our series on David. Not because we're totally through the life of David, but because we're ending one chapter of his life. We're going to get to the point today where David is crowned king. He's no longer running. We're no longer going to see David. If we did continue the study, we're not going to see God dealing with David in exactly the same way. He's still got more lessons to learn, but they're a different kind of life lesson. And we're also going to stop here because this is as far as I've lived. Without saying too much, I don't feel that I can take you much farther than I've gone. And as I've studied through the life of David, the next set of lessons are lessons that are foreign to me. They're things that are still in my future that I can see I'm going to learn. So we're done with David after today. We don't always hear of David as being a great hero of the faith. In fact, aside from this series, I've never heard anybody teach on the life of David and say, wow, look at the faith of David. Everybody talks about the praise of David, the worship of David, the love of David. But we've looked at the faith of David. We've seen that David was a hero of the faith because he consistently trusted God all over again when everything around him fell apart. Right at the point when all around his soul gave way, he turned to God. And we're going to see the last instance of that today. Not the last, but the last we're going to look at. And David, in each of these experiences, used it to become more confident to trust God the next time. And so, not only did he have a tremendous faith, it wasn't done. He knew that his faith had to grow again. And so he always used this time, whatever trial it was, and cataloged it so that the next time he had more faith. And he could say, remember, after the first time it was, remember when I fought a giant and I won? God can get me through anything. And after that, and then remember when the king had me trapped in my own house and God delivered me? Wow, God can deliver me from anything. And then, oh wow, remember when the Philistines had me and they had their army around just me, all alone at their gates, and God delivered me. And then remember the time when I was stuck in a cave and Saul was there, and all of a sudden Saul's army went away. And then we ended with last time, remember the time when Saul had all his best of Israel all around me and we were surrounded. They were coming around one side of the mountain and I was the other. And they were coming from the other direction and me and my men were doomed. And all of a sudden, they all just left. And I thought, this is the end. And so every time he says, God can deliver me the next time. I'm used to this. I know the end of the story. And he lets his faith grow as he lets himself be teachable in every instance. But we expect things to turn out like this for David now, don't we? You know, we got used to it. This is what God does to David. What about me? It worked for him, but it didn't always turn out that way in my life, because it sure felt like a few times God just left me high and dry. We're going to keep dealing with that. We left David last time when Saul had him almost captured. But once again, God worked out a wondrous deliverance. And Saul got a rumor, the Philistines are attacking the other border, and he had to take all his army and leave David when David was stranded. And David, once again, it turned out okay for him. That's what we're going to pick up today in 1 Samuel chapter 24. But before we do that, let's pray again. Our Father in heaven, we come to you today having learned we need you. We've seen that in the life of David, he had a tremendous faith. And we see that we want that kind of faith. We want it to work for us. But it doesn't always. And we ask that you will use this time to teach us that kind of faith. And teach us to love you. Teach us to trust you. I ask that you will guide my words in this time. Use my mouth. Speak through me. I ask that you will guide all of our hearts and help us to listen to your spirit and to be taught. To ask this in Christ's name. Amen. 1 Samuel chapter 24, picking up in verse 1. Once again, Saul had David pinned down. He heard a rumor the Philistines are attacking, and he left with all his army. Very next verse. 1 Samuel 24:1. Now when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines. He was told, saying, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." So then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rock of the wild goats. Does anybody remember how many men are with David? 600 to 700. 3,000 of the choice men from all Israel, and Saul comes against them. He came to the sheepfolds on the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. The men of David said to him, "Behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you.'" Then David arose and cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. It came about afterward that David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the edge of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "Far be it from me, because of the Lord, that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, since he is the Lord's anointed." David persuaded his men with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul. And Saul arose, left the cave, and went on his way. So David's men say, "We've heard you talk, and we know God's for you, and we know you talk." You get that? David was teaching his faith to this band of men who we looked at 1 week and saw that they were a group of complainers, and the discontents of all Israel came to him. He's teaching faith to them. And they say, "This is the day you were talked about. God said he was going to give your enemies into your hands. Your God works. And here it is. Let's get him." David, because it's his right and his privilege, goes up first, but he doesn't kill Saul. Cuts off the edge of his cloak. And he comes back. He says, his conscience bothered him. He says, "Far be it from me, because of the Lord, that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed. Far be it from me, because the God I serve. I know my God. He wants me to be pure, to be blameless. And because of him, I can't do this." He says, "In fact, I feel bad about this piece of cloth I have, because I damaged the king's property." And his men just in bewilderment say, "Alright, well, if you feel that bad already, I guess we can't go any further." So David restrains them with these words. Now afterward, verse 8, David arose and went out of the cave and called after Saul, saying, "My lord, the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the ground and prostrated himself. David then said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men, saying, 'Behold, David seeks to harm you'? Behold, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord had given you into my hand in the cave. And some said to kill you, but my eye had pity on you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Now, my father, see, indeed, see the edge of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the edge of your robe and did not kill you. Know and perceive that there is no evil or rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you, though you are lying in wait for my life to take it. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancients says, 'Out of the wicked comes forth wickedness, the tree shall be known by its fruits.' We have the same type proverb. But my hand has not and shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Who are you pursuing? A dead dog, a single flea? The Lord therefore judge between you and me, and may he see and plead my cause and deliver me from your hand." When David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" Then Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have dealt well with me, while I have dealt wickedly with you. You have declared today that you have done good to me, that the Lord delivered me into your hand, and yet you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safely? May the Lord therefore reward you with good in return for what you have done to me this day. Now behold, I know that you will surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. So now swear to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's household." So David swore to Saul, and Saul went to his home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. So, story is, David gets his chance, David talks to Saul, and Saul is convinced. Says, "You're right. I'm wrong. I can see by just the righteousness of your action that God's going to be with you. And you're going to win this. So I give up. I go home. Just, you know, I know you won't be king until after I'm dead. So afterward, don't wipe out my family. And I know you won't be the one to kill me. Guess that's what I wanted to know." David says, "Good enough." They go home. Almost the end of the story. We're going to skip a chapter. Chapter 25 deals with some other people involved in David's life, but we pick up the story of Saul again in chapter 26, 1. Then the Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is not David hiding on the hill of Hakilah, which is before Jeshimon?" So Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having with him 3,000 chosen men of Israel to search for David in the wilderness of Ziph. And men come to Saul again and they say, because it's worked before, you gain favor with the king by talking about his enemies, you need to go for David again. We know where he is. And Saul's weak. And though he had promised he wasn't going to do it, he comes again and with 3,000 men again. And the story is awful similar. David once again gets a chance to take Saul's life. We're going to start in verse 7. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping inside the circle of the camp with his spear struck in the ground at his head, and Abner and the people were lying around him. Then Abishai said to David, "Today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now therefore, please let me strike him with the spear to the ground with one stroke, and I will not strike him the second time." But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt?" David also said, "As the Lord lives, surely the Lord will strike him, or his day will come that he dies, or he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But now please take the spear that is at his head and the jug of water and let us go." So David took the spear and the jug of water from beside Saul's head, and they went away. But no one saw it or knew it, nor did any awake, for they were all asleep, because a sound sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. And so David once again gets a long distance away. He calls out to Saul, and Saul answers and says in verse 17, "Is that your voice, my son David?" And David said, "It's my voice. It is my voice, my lord the king." And he says, "Listen, here's the spear, here's the water jug. Could have happened again. I'm not going to kill you. Go home." And Saul understands, and Saul gets up, says in, then Saul said in verse 25, "Blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. And Saul says, "Okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. I've learned my lesson." And David, still learning David's life, still seeing how David deals with these things, he's still got a few things to learn. In the very next verse, then David said to himself, now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul will then despair of searching for me any more in the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand. So David arose and crossed over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. And David once again says, "You know, I guess it's still a struggle, and Saul's going to keep trying to kill me, and I'm sick of this game. He's just going to come out one more time. It might be a month. It might be a little more." And David runs away. And he runs to the king of Gath. And he's done this before, but this time it turns out a little better than the last time. Verse 4, "And it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he no longer searched for him. Then David said to Achish, 'If now I have found favor in your sight, please let them give me a place in one of your cities in the country, that I may live there. For why should your servant live in the royal city with you?' So Achish gave Ziklag to him that day. Therefore Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. The number of the days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was a year and 4 months." So David goes. Why? Probably, why did the king not try to kill David again? Last time the king had him, was about to kill him, and David had to pretend he was insane to get away. Why not this time? Well, it's been a couple years. Everyone's heard. The king of the Philistines has heard, oh yeah, David and Saul really are enemies. It's not just a few months or maybe a year after Goliath was killed. It's been a couple years. And the king knows, this is a guy who's really the enemy of the king, and my enemy's enemies are my friends. If I befriend him and I do this, I get a good warrior who's killed a lot of my people. I know he's better than me. And his 600 men who keep on beating me every time they come down against me, if I can get them on my side, fighting against the Israelites, good for everyone. And he brings David into his confidence. He brings David in, gives him a city. But David is in the wrong place. He's among the Lord's enemies. And this isn't where God sent him to go. This is where he decided to go on his own. But God is still faithful. And God still is going to use David, and God is still going to be good to David, though he's made the wrong decision. And he was there a year and 4 months. 1 Samuel, we're going to skip down to chapter 28:1. Now it came about in those days that the Philistines gathered their armed camp for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, "Know assuredly that you will go out with me in the camp, you and your men." One thing he was kind of afraid of, or should have been, the king says and says, "Know for certain, you and your men are going to go with me against Israel. You're going to be fighting and killing your brothers. You're not getting out of it. I gave you a city. I bought you. I own you. You're coming with me." David stuck. David says in verse 2, David said to Achish, "Very well, you shall know what your servant can do." So Achish said to David, "Very well, I'll make you my bodyguard for life. Other words, you're right beside me. I'm not letting you out of my sight. You and me battle together. I'm going to watch." Skip down to chapter 29, verse 1. David's in trouble. He went to the enemies of the Lord for solace when he'd learned so many times to trust the Lord. He had learned what he's supposed to do. So now he's in a hard place. What's he going to do? What's God going to do for him? Chapter 29, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek. Now, while the Israelites were camping by the spring which is in Jezreel, and the lords of the Philistines were proceeding on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were proceeding on in the rear with Achish. Then the commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or rather these years? And I have found no fault in him from the day he deserted to me to this day." But the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him, and the commanders of the Philistines said to him, "Make the man go back, that he may return to his place which you have assigned him, and do not let him go down to battle with us. For in the battle, he may become an adversary to us. For with what could this man make himself acceptable to the Lord? Would it not be with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sing in the dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s?'" And so the men say, "I don't trust him. You know, he says he's with you and he's been fighting the king and he says he's doing good and you trust him, but this is a good chance for him to get back in good graces and I don't want to chance it." And God works. You know, the Lord turns the hand of the king like water in his hands wherever he will. And God works in the hearts of his enemies to get David out of the tough spot that David works himself into. And so God sets him free in this. Then Achish called David and said to him, "As the Lord lives," pretty incredible term, "as the Lord lives, you have been upright. You're going out and you're coming in with me you're going in with me in the army are pleasing in my sight, for I have not found evil in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, you are not pleasing in the sight of the Lord. Now therefore return and go in peace, that you may not displease the Lord of the Philistines." But David can't leave well enough alone. David says to Achish, "Well, what have I done? And what have you found in your servant from the day when I came before you to this day, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" But Achish replied to David, "I know that you are pleasing in my sight like an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said he must not go with us to the battle. Now then arise early in the morning with the servants of your lord who have come with you. As soon as you have risen early in the morning and have light, depart." So David arose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up against Jezreel. So God gets David and his conniving and his lack of faith out of the tough situation again. So even when we are faithless, he remains faithful. So he cannot deny himself, as Paul writes. Next verse, David still got a problem. 1 Samuel 30, verse 1, probably the worst one he's faced to this day. "Then it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, 3 day hike back, that the Amalekites made a raid on the Negev and on Ziklag and had overthrown Ziklag and burned it with fire. And they took captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great, without killing anyone, and carried them off and went on their way. When David and his men came to the city, behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted their voices and wept until there was no strength in them to weep. Now David's two wives had been taken captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. Moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him, for all the people were embittered, each one because of his sons and his daughters. David's in a tough place. An army came and burned the city he was living in, and they come back and everything's burned to the ground, and they see it from a distance and they probably terror in their heart. These are soldiers. They know what's happened. They know what they've done to other enemies. And they come running up. At least they don't find bodies. Well, they maybe took them captive and they have this array of hope. My wife's not dead. My kids aren't dead. But David. These are his mighty men. The men who later are credited with sticking with him through anything. The men spoke of stoning him. They said, that's enough. And, you know, he's a good warrior. Let's not get within sword arm distance. We'll throw rocks at him. He'll be dead. He killed my wife and my kids. Well, he didn't have the guts to stand up to the king of the Philistines, and we had to go off in this fake little travel back and forth to the staying home. And now my kids are gone. My wife's gone. Let's kill him now. David against his own mighty men. Verse 6. The end of verse 6. Moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him. For all the people were embittered, each one because of his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. We don't have a psalm for this. We're not told what David did at this point. We're not given a psalm that says this is the one David wrote when Ziklag was burned. I'd love to read it. Maybe at this time he didn't have the strength to write. Maybe he just sat and prayed. Maybe he just sat and cried himself. I don't know what the deal was, but he strengthened himself in the Lord of God. And we know what the content of. Well, God, you've got me out of the last. And you've always been good. And these men have been serving me in their effort to serve you, and I've been teaching them of your faithfulness. Seems like I know what I gotta do. I'm gonna try to prove you faithful one more time. Verse 7. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, please bring me the ephod. So Abiathar brought the ephod to David. David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this band? Shall I overtake them? And he said to him, pursue, for you will surely overtake them, and you will surely rescue all. So David went, he and 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Bezor, where those left behind remained. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 were too exhausted to cross the brook Bezor, remained behind. Who were too exhausted? So they cried till they had no more strength to even cry. After they'd been walking back 3 days, and then they've got to go pursue and catch an enemy, and 200 of them say, I can't do it. I know, but my heart tells me they're dead anyway. I don't have the strength to go and fight and find out. And 200 men stayed behind. I can identify with those. They're broken. They can't make any more. But David and 400 continue. 1 Samuel 30, verse 16. When he had brought him down, behold, they were spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. David slaughtered them from twilight until evening of the next day, and not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken and rescued his two wives. But nothing of theirs was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that they had taken for themselves. David brought it all back. So David had captured all the sheep and the cattle which the people drove ahead of other livestock, and they said this is David's spoil. David and his men get the desire of their heart. They get their kids back. They get their wives back. And did you notice before that it had been a raid not only on David's little city, but on the land of the Philistines? Because it's kind of a smart thing to do when you know that all the Philistines are coming this way, and they're going to come over here and fight Judah, and you live right down here, and all their men went this way. You can go in and make a pretty easy sweep, and you just pick up all the stuff and take the women and children captive, and all the crops and all the animals, the livestock, and you just kind of go back home before they get back, and they don't even know who did it. And David goes, and without having to fight a single battle, gets all the riches of the Philistines too. And he's got it all. He's got everything at his back. He's got everything of the Philistines, and he's driving it on ahead. And the men are so proud of him, they say, okay, we'll give it all to David. And David takes it, and he gives it to the land of Judah, who's right now losing a battle with the Philistines. And we're going to read about that. And David makes himself look good to his brothers and to the people in the land of Israel, since he's been living with the Philistines, and he gives them all the riches of the Philistines. 1 Samuel 31:1. Now the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle went heavily against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and pierce me through with it. Otherwise, these uncircumcised will come and pierce me through and make sport of me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. So Saul took his sword and fell on it. And his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead. He also fell on his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died with his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men on that day together. When the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley with those who were beyond the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned the city and fled. Then the Philistines came and lived in them. Skip down a little bit to 2 Samuel 1:1. Now it came about after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, that David remained 2 days in Ziklag. So he gets back with his wives, with his children, and all his men's wives and children, and all his extra stuff, to the charred remains of the city they used to live in. On the third day, behold, a man came out of the camp of Saul with his clothes torn and dust on his head. And when he came, and it came about when he came to David that he fell on the ground and prostrated himself. Then David said to him, "From where have you come?" And he said, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." David said to him, "How did it go? Please tell me." And he said, "The people have fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead, and Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also." So David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan are dead?" The young man said to him, "By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and behold, Saul was leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and horsemen pursued him closely. And when he looked behind him, he saw me, and he called to me, and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' Then he said, 'Please stand beside me and kill me, for agony has seized me, because my life still lingers in me.' So I stood beside him and killed him, because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took this crown which was on his head and the bracelet which was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my lord." Then David took hold of all of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and Jonathan and for the people of the Lord and of the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David gets news. The king's dead. Your friend's dead. Your brother Jonathan's dead. The men of Israel are dead. They lost. It was terrible. But the story was a little different. The Bible got two stories. Is the Bible lying? No, it's an accurate account of another man lying. Because we already heard the truth. And this guy is trying to get in good with who he thinks is going to be the new king. And he comes up and says, "I did it. I'll give you the kingly crown. I'll give you the kingly bracelet. I killed him for you." Verse 13, "Then David said to the young man who told him, 'Where are you from?' And he answered, 'I am an alien, an Amalekite.' Then David said to him, 'How is it that you are not afraid to stretch out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?' And David called one of the young men and said, 'Go, cut him down.' So he struck him and he died. And David said to him, 'Your blood is on your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, "I have killed the Lord's anointed."' Then David chanted with this lament over Saul and Jonathan, his son. And he told them to teach the sons of Judah the song of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jashar." And we have a story of a song that David sung in lament to the first king of Israel and to his brother Jonathan, who died. We're not going to read it, except verse 26. "I am very distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love was more wonderful than the love of men, women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war have perished." And David's broken. He got what God promised, didn't he? Even though he didn't do anything for it, he was off on his own. But Saul's been brought down. David can be king. But his brother died. His friend died. His best friend's dead in the process. Chapter 2, verse 1. "Then it came about afterwards that David inquired of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah?' The Lord said, 'Go up.' So David said, 'Where shall I go up?' And he said, 'To Hebron.' So David went up there, and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. And David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. Then the men of Judah came there and anointed David king over the house of Judah. Get down, 2 Samuel 3:1. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. It wasn't all over right there, because Saul had two sons left, actually, a son and a grandson. And one of them gets anointed king, and so everybody says, well, it's the son of the king, and so there's a war between the two families, and Judah's with David, and some of the other Israelites are with Saul, and a lot of them don't care one bit, and they just stay out of the fight. There's a long war, David gets stronger and stronger. 2 Samuel 5:1. Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and said, behold, we are your bone and your flesh. Previously, when Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel out and in. Do you remember? We sang songs about it. You killed 10,000. Saul only killed thousands. You were the commander of the army. You were more important than him even then. And the Lord said to you, you will shepherd my people Israel. You will be a ruler over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them before the Lord at Hebron, and they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years. At Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. 30 years old. I guess the struggles are over, aren't they? No, we're going to find out not. Now David gets to look inward and deal with his own weaknesses and his sins that he's glossed over as God's been teaching him faith, because God's personal. But at 30 years old, God has taught David how to be king and how to look like a sheep to a shepherd so that he has the ability to shepherd someone else. And God had to teach him some incredible dependence, but he brought him through a lot to get him there. Verse 12, and David realized that the Lord established him as king over Israel, and that he had exalted his kingdom for the sake of his people Israel. Verse 17, you know that guy who before wanted David to go out as bodyguard and they were going to be close friends? When the Philistines heard that they had anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to seek out David, and when David heard of it, he went down to the stronghold. Now the Philistines came and spread themselves out in the valley of Rephaim. Then David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand? The Lord said to David, go up, for I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand. So David came to Baal Perazim and defeated them there. And he said, the Lord has broken through my enemies before me like the breakthrough of water. Therefore he named that place Baal Perazim. They abandoned their idols there, so David and his men carried them away. Now the Philistines came up once again and spread themselves out in the valley of Rephaim. When David inquired of the Lord, he said, you shall not go directly up, circle around behind them, and come at them in front of the balsam trees. It shall be when you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then you shall act promptly, for the Lord will have gone out before you to strike the army of the Philistines. Then David did so, just as the Lord commanded him, and he struck down the Philistines from Geba as far as the Gezer. Turn to Psalm 18. We started off saying we don't always hear of David as a great hero of the faith. And yet, at this early part of his life, that seems to be what God is teaching him. Faith, over and over. And the response of his heart is always to call out to God. And then he uses the past experiences where God delivered him last time to trust God in the next time. But somehow we got used to it. And we expect things to turn out like this for David. It's almost like a fairy tale. You know, it always turns out good in the end. You know how it's going to turn out. Nothing's really going to be bad, no matter how bad. It's going to be a sitcom. It's going to be a movie. At the end, 2 hours later or 30 minutes later, it'll all be happy. They're going to be laughing together. But what about us and our lives? Do we trust the Lord to deliver us like David did? More important question. Can we? Can I trust the Lord to deliver me like David did? Not very long ago, a couple months, it was easy to sing with David, Psalm 59, 16, and 17, but as for me, I will sing of thy strength. What? When? In the morning, when you deliver me. And it was fun to see, wow, God's the kind of God who delivers David in the morning when he cries out to him, and he's going to make it. And it was kind of a neat thing to learn. And he stopped. And I stopped. And I just went on with life. And I still didn't trust God 2 weeks later when something hard happened. And I thought, well, I'll just have to work hard. I'll just have to do this myself. We got busy and our lives got busy and we forgot about the lessons we were learning. And while we're thinking of these psalms and singing psalms, one of the purposes in this series is to bring back music and make us want to sing. Make us want to sing to God these psalms that David wrote when we see the context. And we see, you can trust God when it's hard. And we saw David in the distress in the midst of it, crying out to the Lord. And the song included praise to God. At the same time, it included a cry of terror. And I realized I'd forgotten about that. I forgot about the poetry. I forgot about the singing. Why? Don't I long to worship? David longed. He couldn't wait for the chance. And then, sometimes the chance, at the time when it was most bleak, the soul that longed to worship God found an excuse. And he praised God with the excuse that, well, you will deliver me. And he worshiped God at least for that. I don't long for the chances to worship like I used to. And I tried to figure out why. Figured out part of the reason why in my life. Little application on journey. I get to talk too much. The expression of worship of David in the song is concentrated. He'd been longing to worship so long that when he got a chance, it came out as a song and it was short and sweet and to the point. It was concentrated. I get to talk too much. I get to get up here once a week, once every other week, and I get to say all this. I don't have to concentrate it down. And the song's gone out. I need to work on that. I want to worship like David did. I want to long to worship like David did. Psalm 18. David writes, starts off in the introduction, for the choir director, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spoke to the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. And he said, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take fortress. My rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, and I'm saved from my enemies. David's writing this. It's a change. He's writing this at the time of victory and peace. He isn't fleeing from anyone. He's king. And yet he still turns to God. In fact, at this time when he isn't running, this is the time that he writes from the longest and most beautiful psalm, and in fact it's the psalm that gets David's life credit. At the end of the story of David's life, in 1 Samuel 22, this psalm, the whole version, the whole thing gets stuck in Samuel. It's the only one that happens with. And they say, you want to know what kind of king David was? You want to know the kind of person he was? It's this one. David starts off with telling God about his love for him. I love you, O Lord, my strength. Why? Because you deliver me. In fact, it seems like, verse 3, I call upon the Lord and I'm saved from my enemies. It's that simple. But he's writing in peace. No one's trying to kill him now. And in this time of peace, he remembers back to what it's like in the other time. Verses 4 through 6. The cords of death encompassed me. The torrents of ungodliness terrified me. The cords of Sheol surrounded me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called to the Lord and cried to my God for help. And he heard my voice out of his temple, and my cry for help before him came into his ears. Verse 16, if we skip down there, he sent from on high, he took me, he drew me out of many waters, he delivered me from my strong enemy and from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. The Lord, they confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth into a broad place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. And I realized something. I've never done that. Last night I realized this. When I thought I'd been sitting for this all week, I realized I don't think I've ever sat down at the time of peace and praised God individually for the last time this trial he brought me through. So I spent a little while last night doing that, and I thought, okay, I remember, God, you got me to the end of my rope right here. And wait, here I am today. And right then it felt like that was all I could handle. But right now that hurt doesn't hurt. you must have gotten me through. And I do remember now that I did cry out to you in that. And then I went to the next one, and I went chronologically, and I covered about 8 years of my life really quick. And I praised God, and I said, I took the cue from David. Wow, now at peace. My heart needs to worship like this. And this is the hardest time. It's easy to call out to God when everything falls apart, but what about the times when it's all going great? I forget. My heart doesn't long to turn to God, and I see that I don't have the heart to worship, that heart to sing the concentrated worship all the time. We're given a promise in Scripture that God will never allow us to be tested beyond what we're able to bear. I'm sure that those times that were my severest trials, that were all I could bear, they were nothing compared to what a lot of you have been through. I know that. So I'm not the example to hold up. But we're all here. And we made it through them. And God is good to us. And we can, at the times when, right now, when it's easy and we're king, in a way, look back and say, God, I want to praise you. I'm here. I made it. I called out to you and you rescued me. My mother used to do this. She had what she called an Ebenezer box on the wall. There's a verse in 1 Samuel 7:12, and Samuel took a stone, set it between Mizpah and Shen, and named it Ebenezer, saying, thus far the Lord has helped us. Ebenezer means the rock of help. He says, this is as good as it gets. God helped us through these things. My mom had this box on the wall. I was so embarrassed of it. It had the most awful things in it. They were terrible. Every time I saw it, I was embarrassed. Why would you display that? Most people would hide that or burn that. That looks like sin incarnate. I know. That was when I needed help. God helped me. She wasn't afraid to say I was that low in my distress when God called me. I'm a little more hypocritical than that. I don't want people to see how low I got. But I need to at least tell God, you helped me there. I need to worship you because you brought me through. God is personal. He's not just the God of the Bible. I think this is what I've learned through this. I've been through the life of David before. This time through, I learned that God's personal. He's not just the God of the Bible. He works in and through our lives to bring us to himself. It's relationship. Well, I know that. It's relationship, not religion. Here's what hit me. David got to this point without all the scripture we have. He didn't spend hours every morning reading his Bible in his personal quiet time. Number one, he probably, as a soldier, didn't have time to take a bunch of scrolls under his arm and run. He let God teach him in life. And God taught him in life that, I love you. I want you. Will you trust me? It may sound kind of sacrilegious compared to our understanding, but God wants our hearts. He doesn't just want our time reading the Bible. And that's hard for me because I try to be the Bible teacher. I try to know the Bible and I try to have the answers. And I realize I'm leaving God out for the sake of God's Word. He wants the relationship. David went through a lot before God got him to the point where David had a real relationship. And he said, I love you, God, because you got me through everything. When I was right, when I was wrong, when I was sinful, when I was good, you got me through it. Do you think it was worth it to him? Yeah, that's easy. I got another question that hit me. Think it was worth it to God? Did God's nature change? God had to watch his beloved, who he taught to be a sheep, his beloved pet, suffer. Was that worth it to God to get David to the point where David would cry out to him? And God had to do all the work. David never delivered himself. God had to keep on saving him over again. And then when David proved that he still didn't have faith, God had to stick him in another tough situation and devise another way where he could work in David's life and teach him this. Was it worth it to God? No. That's the kind of God David has. It's the kind of God we have. He wants a relationship. He doesn't just want our time. He wants us to learn to live and love him. And so he brought David through some rough spots and through some rocky things. Everything in my life, I realize, has been a good idea up till now. I do things because it's the recommended thing, or it's a good idea, or it seems right. I think I want the next step. I want